Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations Live, where we bring you the best in music, books, entertainment, and current events. When the movers and shakers of the world have something to say to you, they say it to us. Now, here is your host, Cyrus Webb.
And welcome back, everyone, to Conversations Live, where we connect you with the artists and authors you love who bring you the music and books you can't get enough of. I'm your host, Cyrus Webb. Glad you all could join us once again. Our next guest is someone who definitely understands that there are some things that definitely, you know, are universal themes for us all. We all know what it's like to experience loss. We all know what it's like to feel as though we can't go on. We also know what it's like to be able to find the courage to live. And that is exactly what Mary Rockefeller Morgan has been able to do. She chronicles it in her book, When Grief Calls Forth the Healing. I had the opportunity to speak to Mary. It's hard to believe it's been now almost 2 years ago. She's been very gracious enough to come back to talk to us, not only about the response she's gotten to the book, but why it's been important for her to continue to share her message with the world. Mary, hello to you, and welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Cyrus. I'm really happy to be here with you.
Well, look, I'm excited to have you back on. I was sharing with you right before we went live here. I actually reread the book because I wanted to be able to not only to, you know, to refresh my mind to our previous conversation and what you've been able to share with us through the book, but also to be able to kind of think about this theme of grief and something that you said to me right before we went on, and that is how you've been hearing from people literally around the world who, you know, who've been able to connect with you because of this theme. What has that been like for you, Mary, to take what's been very personal for you and to be able to know that you're sharing it with other people around the world?
Well, you know, it's so interesting to me because I think through all of this, through working with twins, through having had this experience of twin loss, and also through being a psychotherapist so that I got to be present for people who are suffering deep personal loss, I was able to gain a much, much more profound appreciation of what the issues are that affect people and how twin loss really acts like a magnifying glass or illuminates some of the deeper issues that happen to people who have had very, very profound interpersonal relationships that then they lose.
Right.
And so this has made an enormous difference to me. And I have thought very deeply about this. I saw a woman, for instance, who lost her only child. This is a woman who absolutely identifies herself as a mother.
Mm-hmm.
And once she lost her child, she didn't know who she was. Now, that's very, very typical, Cyrus, of twins. You know, they grow in relationship from the moment they are embryos in the womb. And so their little sense of I is framed in a we. But here's a woman who is a singleton. And she had this, she was struggling with this same situation. Who am I now? Why is it worth me living at this point? You know, I don't know what I'm meant to do.
You know, it's interesting. When you were just saying that, it reminded me of something else I hadn't planned on talking about from the book. But when you were in Dr. Simmons' office in the book, Mary, and he was showing you the ink block images, and you made the comment, I had made a note in my notes, you'd said to him, all of them look like twins. I don't see any separation in these images. And then you even said, you know, to him, but also I believe to yourself, I think that's a problem. And I think for a lot of us, you know, our identity is tied to so many different things. Do you feel as though, because I know we see it through the book, Mary, as, you know, as we go through When Grief Calls Forth the Healing, we see you being able to evolve into the person you were meant to be. Do you think that has been one of the greatest things that's happened to you after the loss of Michael, being able to find out who you were alone as an individual?
I do. I think that's absolutely correct, what you say. And I know that twins, generally, it's a challenge for them to find their own identity. But the interesting thing is that even in the sonograms that they have taken of twins in the womb, they see two very separate personalities beginning from the very moment that they become embryos and then little fetuses and then babies. They see differences that are quite prevalent. And it isn't as if we don't have an individual identity. It just gets merged sometimes in a relationship. And we really forget that we have a sense of who we are in our own right, and that we have actually a meaning to be found in bringing forth this special person who we were meant to be. So part of the grieving journey, which I help people to do, is to listen, to begin to listen. Listen to who they are. Listen to how they feel. Listen to how they react to different things. And slowly be able to find more and more of who they are as an individual. Then when they begin to feel more safe as somebody in their own right, that they haven't lost all of themselves, but they actually have somebody special in who they are, they're stronger and more able to deal with letting go the physical connection to the other person, which is no longer present.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the thing. And being able to see that, you know, that all of us make our own decisions. You even talk about, as you were speaking to Michael, toward the end of the book, Mary, how you understood that he made choices and that you had to make a choice, and that choice was to live. I want to talk to you a little bit more about that. But for those who are just tuning in, you're listening to Conversations Live. I'm already having a great conversation with Mary Rockefeller Morgan. She's the author of the book, When Grief Calls Forth the Healing. The book was formally entitled Beginning with the End, A Memoir of Twin Loss and Healing. But Mary, you mentioned to me before we went live here that, you know, this book is so much more than just about grief with twins. Talk to us about now the connection you really feel with anyone who has experienced a loss or at least on the path to be able to discover who they are.
Well, the reason I changed the name, Cyrus, is that I wanted to just connect immediately with people about what this book is most deeply about. And I think that there's a great misunderstanding in our way of looking at death. First as a culture, first we're afraid of death. And we don't make a path or a place that's safe for in which we can do the healing that is present for us. One of the things people don't realize is that they have a natural healing process that belongs to them, just like when they have a physical process, they know about that. If they cut their finger or something like that, they can see immediately that the body starts a whole inner process of healing. But they're not aware that that same thing happens psychologically when they lose someone. And we're just told, get up and move on and get on with your life. And that's a huge, huge misunderstanding, because we need to partner with the natural healing process. And we're afraid of that process. And one reason that we're afraid of that process is because and this especially happens with twins, if we allow ourselves to grieve the person who has died, we then are letting go our precious relationship to them and the love that they feel for us and we feel for them. And we are actually, twins feel, and other clients that I've had feel, that they're actually abandoning the one they love if they let go the physical connection to them. That is absolutely untrue. And I really want to stress that. That doesn't happen. Is in truth, in grieving, we are acknowledging that by letting go the physical, we are acknowledging that in grieving, we are actually acknowledging that the physical connection can no longer be there and that physical connection is in the past. But if we grieve that, and it takes the body mind a long time to actually take that knowledge into all parts of ourselves, and that's what we do in grieving. The grief brings that to us. And as we do that, slowly what happens is we find that the relationship we have to the person is actually transforming and is becoming present for us in our hearts as an ongoing an ongoing gift that will nourish us in our life. And that the interesting thing is that we begin to see that the person is much larger than their death. The death
right.
overwhelms us. But when we grieve that physical connection, then the relationship starts broadening out again, and we can see that it's made up of all the precious moments that we've had with that person, and that those precious moments belong to us. Nobody can take those away. It's interesting, you know, one woman, I'll never forget her, a young woman, I talk about her in the book, and she sat there and she was so sitting there in such a place of despair, and she said, I'm not going to work with you, she said, if you take away the fact that I'm a twin. She said, if I grieve, am I no longer going to be a twin? And I just,
wow.
I let her, you know, stay with that feeling and us sharing that huge feeling together. And I explained to her that I was a twin also, that I'd lost a twin, and that I could tell her that that she was not going to lose her twinship, that belonged to her forever. That woman who lost her baby, her child, she was not going to lose her identity as a mother. She would forever be a mother to that child. That part of her identity belongs to her forever.
Right.
And I think it's so important for people to realize that.
It is. And I think, too, to appreciate the fact that as the living that our loved ones want us to really live, in all of the ways that that means. You shared in the book, and I mentioned this to you, that I wanted to reference this, if you didn't mind, about when you were doing interviews. You had a great conversation with your mother, and
mm-hmm.
you were able to talk to one of your old nurses, Pat. And she was relaying information about when Michael and you were young, and you know, and the way that you all were normally happy until you were separated. And what I thought was so fascinating about when I was reading back through the book, Mary, I wanted to read this part because, you know, there was this memory that you shared in the book, and I think our listeners will really appreciate this, where you and Michael were doing finger painting in the nursery. And this is what you actually wrote in the book, and I thought this is something that a lot of us can definitely see ourselves in. I shared a memory of finger painting at nursery school with Pat. Like the other school children, Michael and I were each given separate paints and sheets of paper. I left mine and joined Michael. Both of us are on our knees, our fingers oozing in and out of each other's grasp as we slapped the paper and pushed the delicious colored liquid out over the white sheet. Soon the teacher came over and made me leave Michael and go back to my place. I sat and stared at the paper and the paints. Alone, I had no sense of what to do or what to make. And then Pat said to you, that was a problem. We often had difficulty getting you to engage in any endeavor without your brother. The reason I wanted to reference that is because of what you said to Michael in the book, Mary, and I'd like to read a part of it and then talk to you about it. And that is when you finally realize what you had to do. You say this, I want to walk with you, Michael, to bear witness to what happened, to know your fear, your courage, your pain. I cannot. I have to free us both. Complete myself and you without ever knowing what really happened. Now when I dare to uncover your death, when I dare to watch you start to swim, I see you disappear into the horizon. You are gone, Michael. The final truth is your beautiful life is gone. How did that moment for you, Mary, coupled with what, you know, the memories, because the memories will always live with you, the memories will always be with you, but how did that moment of not only realizing the truth but walking in the truth, how did that free you?
It freed me because I could not walk my life. If I walked my life in feeling like Michael was there when he wasn't, all it did was bring me back to his death and then to a great sense of despair. And once I allowed him to leave me in the way in which he was physically not present anymore, once that actually completed itself in me, then I began to feel him there again. And that's such an irony. It's just such an irony, and people are not told that. So
right.
I think that was a major thing for me. And, I mean, I've had experiences in my life now today, Cyrus, where I just sort of feel he's in the background. This is not a memory. I'm not talking about a memory. I'm talking about that he's just there in the background. I write about that in the end of the book when I actually am a therapist working in a home for the homeless in Harlem. And I took this group of mentally challenged and disturbed women on the botanical gardens on a trip after we'd been together as a group, as a women's group, and they wanted to go. And my supervisor didn't want me to take them because they were quite disturbed and all kinds of things could happen. And I felt Michael in the background smiling and thinking, Mary, that's a fabulous idea. You can do it. And I went with my instinct. And those women who were really all, you know, they were really disabled in so many ways. They were able each to participate in making this thing happen. And we pulled together as a group to show the, you know, that my supervisor, that we could do it and that they could
right.
do it. And it was miraculous. And, I mean, there was Michael nurturing me and being a gift to me in the background, giving me courage, where I never really had that when we were together as little ones. He had the courage. But once we were separated, then I began to find my own courage inside, and he nurtured that.
Wow, that is so powerful. Mary, you actually wrote this, and I think this really sums up what you just said. I felt his twinship and his presence as I realized a prayer for my wilderness solo had been answered. I had taken in and expressed Mike's ability to joyfully embrace life without hesitation and fear. Michael was alive in me. And I think it's that part of him, of being able to live, not being afraid of what was ahead, and being able to know that great things can come even from uncertainty. I think that in itself is a gift, and it's a gift that now other people are able to know that I can be bold, I can be brave. And it doesn't mean that, you know, that I'm forgetting, but it really means that I'm fulfilling life.
Well, that's so beautifully put, Cyrus, and I'm so touched by your, you know, finding that passage and just coming right out with that on the show. It's just a lovely thing, and I am grateful both for myself and for everybody out there.
Yeah. Well, I'm grateful to you because it's because of you that conversations like this are able to be had, Mary, and be had in a way that is real. And I think because it is something that you know, it's something that you've lived, and it's something that you continue to help people to work through. And I think, you know, that the main thing, as you said from that one example that you gave, you know, about, you know, not feeling as though you have to give up the twinship, but feeling as though that is just a part of who you are, and that is who you are, that makes you who you are, and that is what makes you great, and that's what makes you special. And no one can take that away from you. And I think anyone, whether they, you know, have lost a twin or, you know, or have a twin, you know, none of us have to feel like that. None of us have to feel as though we have to give up.
There are so many special relationships in this world.
Right.
So many unique, special relationships. And it applies to that absolute, those relationships just as well. And I talk a lot in the book about how we grieve, too, which I think will be helpful to people.
And I think it is. And I think conversations like this, I believe, Mary, are so helpful as well, because it definitely allows people to know it's okay for me to talk about it and not feel as though they have to hide it. Because I think by your talking about it, by your having the conversations, even with yourself, they were able to see in the book. I think that is how you become the person that you are today, and that is how you're able to help people today.
Well, that's such a good point, because I think we heal in connection. We heal in connection to ourselves, as you were just saying, and then in connection to others. and then also in connection to nature, which is all around us, showing us how life and death and rebirth are happening, you know, and that's part of the indigenous place. That's our indigenous grounding for ourselves. And so we see that, but we do not heal in isolation. And so these kind of conversations we're having, Cyrus, in that sense is really good too, that we can open up and not be afraid and we can trust our feelings.
Exactly. Definitely. And they are definitely to be trusted and to be shared. Again, everyone, I've been speaking with Mary Rockefeller Morgan. She's the author of the book, When Grief Calls Forth the Healing. It's a fascinating look, not only into her own life, but also, I think, into all of our lives as we're going through grief, going through, you know, the challenge of going forward. And I think, too, Mary, of being able to grow into who we are, because that is a big part of your journey as well. Mary, how can our listeners stay in contact with you and get the book for themselves?
I think that they can go on my website and or go right to Amazon and print in When Grief Calls Forth the Healing. And that's .com. And, you know, that's my website, When Grief Calls Forth the Healing. And or you can just go to Amazon or, you know, Barnes & Noble or any of those places. Or you can order it from your bookstore if they don't have it.
Exactly. So definitely make a note of that. When Grief Calls Forth the Healing is the title of the book. And then, as Mary said, that is also the website. So you can go to the website easily from there as well, whengriefcallsforththehealing.com. And you can find out more information about Mary, about the book, and also how you can get it for yourself. Mary, it has really been a pleasure having you back. It's like having another conversation with a good friend. I really appreciate
you
doing this for us. And it goes without saying, you're welcome back here anytime.
Thank you very much, and blessings on the good work that you do.
Well, thank you. Blessings to you as well and the work that you're doing, Mary, and continue to do. And we thank all of you for tuning in as well, both on the radio side of our program as well as online. Now, if you came in late and missed part of the conversation, and this was a powerful one, don't worry. Thanks to our friends at Blog Talk, you can catch the podcast about 5 minutes after we go off the air. All you have to do is go to our radio website at conversationsliferadio.com. That's conversations with an S, liferadio.com. Also, if you're friends with us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter, the link's already available on both of those places. You can head over to facebook.com/CyrusWeb or twitter.com/CyrusWeb. Click on the link there. You can listen to the show completely for free, and also you can connect it with your friends using the social media buttons that you'll find there. Until next time, I am Cyrus Webb saying, as always, enjoy your day, enjoy your life, enjoy your world. Make sure you take out time to enjoy some good music and a great book. Thank you all for choosing Conversations Live today. You all make it a great one.